Okay. So my name is Catherine and I'm a compulsive overeater. And thank you, Martine, for inviting me. I'm a little bit overwhelmed when I see the amount of participants and the fact that I'm recorded. I have a little sticker up here on my computer to speak slowly and to breathe. I'm aware, I don't know if anyone can pick up my accent. I'm Irish, I'm in Ireland, and I know that I tend to speak quickly, so I would try and slow it down. Yeah, I'm a compulsive overeater. My abstinence date is the 7th of February 2017, so I have 7 years abstinence. And when I say that, I don't say it as a boast. I say it in gratitude because for most of my life, probably for 40 years before that, I was trying to do it on my own and I couldn't do it. So it's through the it's only with my higher power and with this program and with fellows like you that I got and stay abstinent. And that's why I'm delighted to do service, even though it's scary. And I'd actually written a quote. We'd read step six recently in my home meeting. And the sentence that stood out to me there was, "No longer will we allow fear to keep us from doing what is best for us." And this is a prime example of how I don't let fear mostly interfere with what my higher power wants me to do. So I'll stick to the traditional way that we've been taught to do it in the big book, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I think I've always been a compulsive overeater. I know everybody has different opinions on whether they are or aren't, and that's something actually that I wanted to say. I can only share my experience, strength, and hope. It could be a lot different from everybody else. And I think particularly in this program in OA, everyone has such different issues around the food and the food behaviors, such different paths to it, to becoming abstinent and maybe not even being abstinent, but being in program. So all I can share is my experience. And I hope that it helps somebody. And if it doesn't agree with somebody else, well, then just ignore what I say. So what it was like, as I said, I think I was always a compulsive overeater. My first real memory, I think I was probably around 6 or 7 when I got my pocket money as a child, and I realized that the amount that I got was able to buy me a certain substance, a whole packet of a certain substance. And I just can still remember the joy of that. I'm thinking, well, when I buy it, how am I going to keep it for my siblings so they can't see it? So if ever I begin to doubt that I'm a compulsive overeater, I just have to remember that. I have a very varied history of dieting. I think what took me so long to get to program was that I was quite a successful dieter. I had a pattern of being really good dieting, and I was almost as obsessed with dieting as I was with the food. So when I was either dieting or I wasn't dieting. When I was dieting, I had spreadsheets, I had notebooks. I could tell you the calorie in every item of food. I could tell you exactly how many calories I earned in exercise. And in fact, that's something I learned that was completely new to me when I came into the program, that I actually was exercise bulimic. I used exercise as a way to control my weight and to play with the figures and to try and eat as much as I could without putting on too much weight. But I was always overweight, anyway. But and this success that I had with diet, I lost probably consistently every year, maybe the same 10 kilos, which is what about 22, 25 pounds, something like that. I'd begin a diet, I'd lose it all pretty successfully, and then I'd go, I'm grand now, and then I'd start again, and the food would come back immediately. And what I think that gave me was this illusion of control, because I always knew that no matter how bad it got, I knew what I had to do to get rid of it. And that just kept the cycle going the whole time, until it didn't work anymore. And again, what I found out was I have a progressive disease and it was always going to get worse. So the periods where I was dieting got less, the periods where I was binging got longer, until the day it happened that I had started my traditional diet and it wasn't working. And that was the scariest place I had ever been. I did not know what to do. I had gone through my, just to give it a little bit of background, I have been a member of Al-Anon. I know we don't share much about other programs, but it is part of my story. I was in Al-Anon for several years and still considered myself a member of the program. So I knew about the steps, I knew about the big book, I knew about Bill, I saw the lovely picture of Lois. I knew it all, but I still couldn't put it into practice because I wasn't in OA. I had heard of OA, I looked it up on online. I saw about abstinence, i.e., putting down your trigger foods, and I said, no way, I can control my trigger foods, so that's not for me, until the day I couldn't. And I had spent most of my life blaming other people. The reason why I ate so much, it was comfort food. If you had the life that I had, if you had the husband that I had, if you had the children I had, if you had the job that I had, that was the reason why I was doing it.
5 minutes,
Until,
Catherine.
thank you, Martine. Until one of the triggers that got me, that's why I get into what happened. I was in a new relationship, a very healthy relationship after being in a dysfunctional marriage for many years. My new partner was in AA, very much recovered, recovering in AA. And I thought, well, this is it. So this would be, there's no reason for me to eat anymore. Life is perfect. Why? I'm sorted now, but I couldn't stop eating. And the day that I actually hid the food wrappers from my new partner was part of the process that got me to realize that I had a problem. And so on the 6th of February, 2017, after trying for several weeks to begin the New Year diet that always worked for me, that didn't work anymore, I was scared enough and defeated enough by the food to pick up the phone. And I went to my first OA meeting that evening. I was living in Dublin at the time. I spent most of my adult life working in Brussels, but I was living in Dublin at the time. And I went to my first OA meeting in Dublin. And the main thing I remember at the time was the shame of having to admit that I wasn't in control, the shame of hoping that nobody would recognize me, that I wouldn't meet anybody there that knew me. And the shame of what I've learned now is the shame of not being perfect because everything else went so well in my life. You know, I was good at my job, I was good, I was a good girl, and I still couldn't control the food. And it was obvious on my body. So it was obvious to everyone I met that there was something not right in my head. So it was really about shame when I went into the meeting. But when I left the meeting, I felt nothing but relief because I'd heard people sharing about things that I was doing with the food. And they shared that they didn't have to do that anymore. It was such a relief. And I spoke to a woman after the meeting who went on to become my sponsor. She said, keep it simple. You know, you've got to find out what your trigger foods are. And for me, it's a three, I do 3 meals a day. I used to say 3 meals a day with nothing in between. And I've heard someone say 3 meals a day with life in between. And that's exactly what it is for me. And to look at my food behaviors. My food behaviors were about eating at home in front of the television when nobody was around, and eating whenever I went, like when the dial in the car for the gas went like this much down. Oh, I have to go into the gas station to get petrol. So that was a behavior that had to go very quickly as well. And I didn't think for a minute that I would be able to put down my trigger foods for an hour, let alone for a lifetime. And I know it's not for a lifetime. I know it's for a day at a time. I spoke to my sister the following day. She was my diet buddy, and I was trying to explain to her this new thing that I was trying. And she said, "Does that mean you'll never be able to eat X ever again?" And I said, "Well, I'm not going to eat it for today." And that has been the way that I've done it for the last 7 years and 4 months. For today, I'm not going to do it, with the help of my higher power. The next morning after the meeting, I remembered that many years before in Al-Anon, I had turned my will and my life over to the care of my higher power. I got down on my knees and I said the third step prayer for the first time in several years. And personally, I believe that that is what got me abstinent and helps me stay abstinent. It's my belief, and I'm not willing to take a chance that it's not, that it won't work, that it's not the case. I hand my will and my life over to the care of my higher power every morning. And before I even open my eyes, I say, I do the first three steps: powerless over food, I'm powerless over people, places, and things. My life is unmanageable without your help. And then the third step prayer.
10 minutes, Catherine.
Thank you. Thank you, Martine. So what's it like now? Excuse me, I'll just take some water. I think the biggest change for me in terms of my relationship with food is the relief that I've had from the obsession. So forgetting about the actual food substances, it's the obsession about the food. It's about what am I going to eat? When will I eat it? How will I eat it? What can I eat when people are watching me? What can I eat when people aren't watching me? And then when I was dieting, what can't I eat? And what all the restricting? It was just exhausting mentally, apart from physically. Apart from the damage I was doing to my physical health, my mental health was very much impacted by my obsession around food and exercise. And I had to work a lot on the exercise in the beginning to actually stop exercising at all, because one of my character defects that I learned very quickly, I'm very much black and white. I either want to, exactly like it says in our first step, I want it all or I don't want it, don't want any. And it's very much the case for me, not only with the food, but with exercise. So over the years, I've managed to hand my exercise and my food over to my higher power. I'm not always perfect. I'm abstinent, but the obsession can sometimes come back. If I put on some clothes and they feel maybe a little bit tight, my first instinct is I gotta go out and do some exercise. And that's, I find that very hard to hand over, but I do it anyway because that's what I've been taught. You know, life outside the rooms was difficult. Sometimes life inside the rooms can be difficult, but that's just tough. You know, we've got to do, we've got to, I still prefer this. I prefer the worst day abstinent than my, is that the way I say it? The worst day is abstinent than my best day when I was in the food. My connection with my higher power has changed significantly over the last 7 years. I come from a Catholic background, which I had rejected when I was a teenager. I have a spiritual belief, but I wasn't really sure what it was, and I wasn't. And what I've learned is it doesn't really matter what I believe. I just have to believe. As someone said to me, you know, it's in Al-Anon, you know, the only thing you need to know about your higher power is that it exists and you're not it. And that's what I have to do. And I have worked in the step, I've worked the steps several times, both through the big book, through our the OA 12 and 12. I've done it through a Buddhist way as well. I'm just open to any experience that will bring me closer to my higher power. For the moment, my higher power is a female energy. That can change. For me, it doesn't matter. Once I have something that connects me to what nobody really knows is, but I do truly believe that there's something there. And this connection that I have is contingent on me maintaining a fit spiritual condition. And to do that, there are things that I have to do every day. And it's not even anymore that I have to do. There's things that I want to do. There's things that I really, really want to do. Some days I don't want to do them, and I do them anyway, because that's what I've been taught. I had to take a big ego hit when I came in, you know, because I thought I knew everything about food and about myself, and I didn't. I've learned so much about myself. And one thing that I learned about myself was that I was so hard on myself because I wasn't perfect. I expected perfection in you, and I certainly expected in me. And when I didn't get it, when I didn't find it in myself, I just beat myself up. And what I can sometimes do is, and again, this is my personal experience, I sometimes find the steps, I can use those as a reason to beat myself up. I'm not doing them right. I'm not doing them properly. I'm not doing them often enough. And what I've learned from my sponsor in this round of the steps is this idea of just doing it good enough. It doesn't have to be perfect. We're human, we're not perfect. And it's given me such a sense of self-compassion because I couldn't be compassionate for other people if I can't give it to myself. So the fact now that I can, and it's not about going easy on myself and getting myself off the hook. It's just accepting that I'm not perfect and I'm just going to keep trying. And I see that, and I can give that to fellows, and certainly to the women that I work with as well as sponsees. Another thing that's relatively new for me is that it's brought a lightness to my life, a sense of joy. I don't take myself too seriously anymore. I laugh a lot more. I can see the fun in things and in people. Because what I really, really believe is that this too shall pass. Whatever is happening, whether it's good, whether it's bad, it's going to pass. And the bottom line is, I'm not in charge. My higher power has a path for me that I can choose to take or I can ignore. And if I ignore it, that's okay. I can keep going, and then the path will diverge and will get back to the way it should be if I keep in my fit spiritual condition. I'm going through a process at the moment. An example with them, we're having a serious problem with the house. I'm recently retired. We bought the dream house in the countryside, and we're having serious issues with it. So much so that we're thinking we'll never be able to sell it. It's probably going to fall down. And, my fear goes, I'm going to be left penniless and homeless. That's not true. But what's happening is that I, for the first time in many, like in all my recovery, I truly, truly believe that my higher power has got my back, and that all I need to do is take the next right step. And for me, sometimes it's a program of action, and I really, really believe this. But for me, sometimes taking no action is the action. Because I was a doer, I was a, I, you know, I show me a task, show me a goal, and I'll get it done. And that meant that I was in control. So for me, accepting that I'm not in control means not taking action. Sometimes sitting back and waiting, having patience, and letting my higher power do the work to get me in the right place. As happened here, we were told absolutely with the house, there's no way the insurance company is going to cover whatever's happening. Absolutely no way. We were told by many, many people. We got a letter from the insurance company last week to say that they were going to cover it. I didn't have to do anything. I just had to sit and wait and be patient and pray. The other thing that's coming up for me recently is about character defects, and as we're on step six this month as well, I feel that I've dealt a lot with my character defects, but as I go deeper and take the skin off the onion, I'm finding a lot more subtle character defects that are no less important and sometimes even worse, because it's really ego. It's a real threat to my ego. Seeing things that I do, particularly in my relationship with my husband, that just isn't nice, that I wasn't able to see before because I was so busy looking at my bigger defects of character. But these are small little things that I can poke away, and it's just, I found it sometimes even very difficult to say to my sponsor that I've noticed I'm doing this, because again, I want to be perfect. I don't want anyone to think that I'm not a nice person. But again, I see it as, thank you, Martine. Thank you. I see it as a really, really important part of my recovery. And I see that it's my higher power working with me to just show me another way to be that little bit better. I don't have to be perfect. I just want to be the best that I can be today. That means to me showing up here, even though there are 60 people listening to me and I'm absolutely terrified. And it means being ready to admit to my sponsor and to make amends to my husband when I see these character defects that I really, really don't like. Like, how dare, like, the ego is amazing. I didn't even know that I had that. Like, how could I have that? I'm so perfect. And then again, I have to laugh at myself. And this is what the program has given me. I think that's really all the I have made a couple of notes, which is the joy of being on Zoom. But there was one more sentence that came that really struck me when we were reading step six. And it was, we dedicate ourselves to a lifetime of growth and change. And that for me is fantastic news. But when I came into program first and saw the 12 steps, I said 12 steps, one a month, maybe two a month. I could be out of here in 6 months if I'm really good and work really hard and I can get back to my normal life. If you had told me that I'd have to dedicate myself to a lifetime of growth and change, I would have run the other way. It would have been the worst news I ever heard. And today, that's the best news. That I have a program, I have fellows, and I have meetings to go to, and I have my higher power, I have the big book, and I have all of OA literature that can help me dedicate myself to a lifetime of growth and change. And for that, I'm truly, truly grateful. I leave it at that. Thank you.